This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views of the most experienced and accomplished mediators and others experienced in the process. Through our discussions, you will gain insight into how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Lynn litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998 and is a member of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution each year since 2014. And now your host, Lynn Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you today by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals and ADR Services, Inc. In each episode of this podcast, you're going to hear a story about a conflict, the impact that the conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from the conflict and its resolution. Now, you're going to hear a story today, but many of the details of the story have been modified to preserve the confidentiality essential to mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Joining me today is Scott Dickinson, and Scott has as varied a background that he brings to mediation as almost any mediator you're ever going to meet. Aside from the years and years of practice in litigation, representing plaintiffs and defendants in a variety of civil matters. He's represented insurance companies handling personal injury claims, first party bad faith, UIM and UM matters, and also represented plaintiffs in employment matters. And he's now mediated about 3,500 cases. And when the Los Angeles Daily Journal had a list of top 50 neutrals in California, Scott, of course, was on that list from 2010 to 2013. Scott can get into a little bit what his style is during the course of this podcast. But Scott also has a background in anatomy and physiology. He has taught graduate level courses in sports medicine. And I don't know if you got into that, Scott, because you were a football player or in spite of the fact you were a football player, but you certainly bring a lot of things to the table. So thank you, Scott, for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and happy to help out and tell you all about the case that we're about to dive into here.
Well, yeah, that case is going to be interesting. I've kind of labeled it the cranky old guy. Scott, tell us about what led to this case. What's the background?
Well, I do a lot of cases. You know, I'd say maybe 60 to 70% of my cases are personal injury type related cases. And this case came to me a while back. I won't use the real names, but it came to me a while back where I knew there would be one plaintiff, and I knew his wife was going to be a part of the mediation, and he was represented by a lawyer. So they scheduled an appointment for the lawyer to be here with the, I'm going to call him Herb. Herb will be our plaintiff in this case, and his wife. And of course, we had an insurance adjuster and a defense attorney. Very competent people. The lawyers were very well versed in the case, very professional. So I thought this was going to be a good case, you know, get through it, the normal garden variety. And there was no issues that I thought were, you know, really unique. So that's how it got to me, and set it up for a full day, I believe. That would be 8 hours from about 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock at night. So I was a little curious as to why they set it up for a full day, because it seemed pretty simple to me, but that's what they did.
Well, what was the incident that gave rise to the dispute, Scott?
Well, he was driving one day back, I believe it was from Las Vegas, and he was with his wife, and they were driving, and at some point in time, there was an intersection, and he was driving his sedan vehicle, four-door sedan, going the speed limit, 60, 65 or so. It was at nighttime, and then all of a sudden, somebody ran through one of the intersections on a red light and broadsided his vehicle. And so he sustained injuries and medical bills. And oddly enough, his wife was not a part of the case in terms of injuries, but she had a derivative claim of a loss consortium claim. So that's the accident. And from there, it was, he actually drove home, or actually, he got a tow truck driver drove him home. And from there, the treatment started and things got interesting after that.
Well, let's see. So it is run of the mill, garden variety, what, soft tissue, no serious injuries?
Right. In fact, there was no broken bones. The MRI studies didn't show any significant neurological injury, nerve impingement, or anything of that nature. There was no traumatic brain injury claim. It was basically muscular ligamentous type injury to the neck and the lower back. There was no peripheral radicular type complaints down the upper extremity or lower extremity. So I thought, boy, when I read the briefs, okay, this shouldn't be that difficult. Neck back pain, soft tissue in nature. No surgery on the horizon. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm not going to need 8 hours to resolve this case. But certainly I didn't know what was about ready to hit me as we got into mediation.
Well, okay. So you've got a situation where it would appear going into this, you've got let's see, very, very minor types of injuries, no long-term effects of this. And what was the guy, the plaintiff was what, in his 70s, thereabouts?
No, Herb was 85 years old.
Wow.
The
Okay.
only thing I didn't like about Herb is he had a thick head of hair. So that was the first thing
Ha.
that I objected to. But overall, he came in, he was very nice, 85 years old, and very fatherly, articulated very well. And at the onset, he wasn't very emotional. That soon was going to change. In the upcoming hours. But overall, just a normal guy that you'd probably see as your next door neighbor. And his wife was very nice, very, just a real nice lady, the kind of lady that you'd ask a next door neighbor, could you give me a cup of sugar? She'd probably come over with, a whole pound of sugar. That's how nice she was. So, real nice people. Didn't think I'd have any problem with them whatsoever.
Now, when you first get a case, do you typically try to talk to counsel before that case, before the mediation?
It's kind of like in the mediation world, the answer is it depends. Depends on the case. If it's a simple case, I generally don't. If they call me and want to, I'm happy to do so. If there's a complex case, a lot of issues, I'll call one of up or both of them and say, hey, where do we really want to focus here today? What's the real big issue that's driving this case? Why is this conflict so contentious? That kind of thing. And I always like to know if the attorneys had they talked to each other before the mediation to kind of find out together what's their game plan. Oddly enough, many times they don't talk to each other. They don't know where each other stands with their demand or the offer. So it's challenging when you get into a mediation when there's no communication between the two. Many times, I find that to be more the case now than the other way around where they do talk. But I do enjoy talking to them. If I'm seeing a case, just kind of wondering where the demands is, I'll call them up and say, "What's your demand?" And then I'll call the other side. So where are you in the offer? Now here's the thing: when you get a demand in the offer, I generally don't believe them anyway because they're always subject to change. So they kind of play me a little bit, testing the mediator, so to speak, to see if I'm going to buy their story at the onset. So I'm very sensitive to that too. So it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to ask them what your demand and the ask the other guy what the offer is. But I just take it with a grain of salt.
So in Herb's case, they hadn't exchanged offers at all?
No, there was no communication at all. Well, I take that back. There was no discussion as to where they could go. I think there was a, there, as I recall, there was a policy demand. The policy, I believe, was $250,000. And Herb was dead set on getting that $250,000. And
So,
he made that very clear to me probably within the first 20 minutes. Where's my $250,000? So I knew I had a challenge there that day.
okay, so that was the first clue that things were not exactly laid out for you to just kind of step in and say, hey, what do you accept? What do you offer? And get it done.
Right. So, yeah, within 20 minutes, he kind of looked at me and said, Mr. Mediator, it's been great to meet you, but I really want that 250. I go, okay, well, you, him and I are going to, have some discussion. And of course, I had similar discussion with the defense because they told me they had very, very little money on the case. So I had a challenging challenge with them as well coming up.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to get a little bit behind the curtain in terms of what was taking place in both of those rooms and how Herb's expectations were or were not met. I'm Len Levy. I'm chatting with Scott Dickinson, and we'll be back in a moment.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Scott Dickinson. Scott, it was about to tell us what happened in the mediation. You have a guy who wants $250,000, which is the policy limits. Did you talk to his attorney about maybe that might not be realistic?
Oh, absolutely. My style as a mediator is I don't really beat around the bush very much. I'm very transparent, very direct to the point. So when I saw a 250 demand and the medical bills were, $15,000, $16,000, not that that's dispositive, but it wasn't a whole lot of medical bills and, the physical therapy, chiropractic care, and some diagnostic films, MRIs and XRIs, and that pretty much was it. And so when I went in to see the plaintiff's attorney, well, actually, I met the plaintiff first, met his wife first, got that out of the way, the introductory, hello, how are you? It's so nice to see you today. And we're here to help you resolve a dispute that you have so we don't have to go to trial and test the waters to see what a jury thinks of your case, not to mention the cost involved. So got that out of the way. And I said, before we get started, I'd like to talk to your attorney here about some procedural matters. We'll be back in 2 minutes. I promise you, I will return your lawyer. So I stepped out. And the first thing I said to him is I sat him down and said, so how serious are you about this 250 demand? You having client control issues or what's going on? Because you know it, I know it. Carrier's never going to give you 250. So maybe we ought to readjust that demand so we get the carrier in line with us to allow me some leverage to work to get the best deal I can for you. And so he said, Scott, I know my problem is I got a serious, serious client control issue, not only with her, but also his wife. He thinks his case is worth 10 times that. And so the policy is a policy. He gave me authority to demand the policy. So that's what I did. So you got your work cut out for you, Mr. Mediator, is basically what he said. So
well, that explains the 8 hours.
Now I realize, yeah, I might need 8 hours. Who knows? Maybe, maybe more than that at that point in time. So I figured, okay, I'm going to have some issues with Herb. And then, of course, I got to deal with the insurance carrier, who's been telling me not only in their brief, but when I met them for the first time was, Scott, this case is, we got a little cost of defense money on this case, and that's about it type of approach. And so it was really, it was right. I did have my work cut out for me that day. I had a carrier that just was very strong, and I knew the insurance adjuster from the past. So I knew what the temperament was, and I knew how they handled their cases. And it wasn't going to be 250. And so I knew I had to stretch the carrier, stretch their rubber band, and loosen up the plaintiff a little bit to get him in line with what was more reasonable and likely, in line with what juries might do with these kind of cases.
So you had a game plan that changed dramatically as soon as you talked to the attorneys and the parties.
Well, yeah, 180 degrees difference.
Right. So how did you approach this? And is this typical of how you generally approach these kinds of cases when you're throwing a curveball like this?
Now, every case is different. You're dealing with different personalities. I've got two lawyers, very learned, smart, very professional lawyers. And I got an adjuster who was in the case from the get-go, 30 years plus experience. So I'm dealing with real pros. And but I knew right away, okay, I got to figure out a strategy here. So what I remember what I did was I left the rooms and I told the plaintiff's attorney, I'll be right back. I told the defense, I'll be right back. I actually came to my office here, kind of sat down and just kind of looked over the horizon, thinking, okay, what do I got to do to get this thing to a settlement? And the first thing that came to my mind is I got to shape expectations. I got to get expectations in order because clearly the plaintiff had unrealistic expectations. And once I get those expectations manageable, then I can work on the defense to talk to them about maybe some areas they need to consider that they may not have considered coming into the mediation, maybe making them feel a little uncomfortable, a little edgy about their current position. Because when they both came into the mediation, both sides, they were sitting on the side of the beach in a nice, warm, comfy sand on a nice lounge chair. I had to get them uncomfortable and get them in the water so they feel like, okay, wow, we didn't consider this. So it's going to be a little painful. I told them both at the onset, to settle this case, it's going to be a little painful. You're not going to walk out of here high-fiving each other. You're going to say, no doubt, Mr. Herb, you're going to say, geez, I wanted a little bit more. Actually, I wanted a lot more, but I think I can live with this number. That's the idea. The defense, gee, we really wanted to settle this thing for, $25,000 or less. But, we looked at it, we considered some of the things the mediator said, got us thinking a little bit. And, we can live with the number that he's trying to take us to. So that's what I told both of them, getting them conditioned that this is not going to be what you want it to be. It's going to be a what you can live with. That's the idea.
So the conditioning of the parties to adjust their expectations, even in the absence of getting Herb and Mrs. Herb to adjust their expectations,
Right.
was essential to getting it settled.
Absolutely. Actually, I also considered. The more I talked about the accident with Herb, the more I talked about his injuries, the more inflamed he got. It raised his temperature. It encouraged him to tell me more and more about how he was a victim. And I had to get him out of his victim state of mind. Because I flat out told him, I said, Herb, as I'm hearing you tell me about your case and hearing your wife tell me about how bad this thing has affected your life, you seem to be a victim. Is that how you see yourself, as a victim? And absolutely, he jumped in, and I took him there purposely. I wanted him to admit he was what he perceived himself to be a victim, because I said, Herb, in life, we don't get dealt a great deck of cards all the time. We got to deal with those cards that we're dealt with. And in this case, in your life, you've got a certain deck of cards you're playing throughout your 85 years, and you're now looking at a new game called this accident, and you've got dealt a deck of cards, and you see that the cards not looking good. Because of that, you see yourself as a victim. And as long as you see yourself as a victim, you're never going to be happy. You're never going to be satisfied, no matter what this case settles for. You're always going to be deeming yourself, woe is me. Is that how you want to see yourself, Herb, and your wife? Did you want your wife to see you going through that kind of stress by looking at yourself as a victim every time you look in the mirror? So now, see, now what I've done is I've got him off thinking about his injuries and how the accident was, and now thinking about his character, thinking about something about his life other than the accident. I had to get him off that train. Otherwise, I would have lost him. So that's what I did. That's what I attempted to do.
And overlaying all of this, I picked up one thing you'd said. They were on their way back from Las Vegas, right?
Yes.
So, are you talking about somebody who loves to gamble, or somebody who's somebody less risk adverse?
No, they were there just to relax, and I think they saw a couple shows, and Her was not a gambling guy, very conservative, that kind of thing. And I knew he wasn't a gambling guy because I asked him a lot of those type of questions. Because at one point in time in the mediation, I said, "Well, Herb, look, if you're a gambling guy and you want to put all your money on odd versus even, then I guess you just go to trial, Herb. Take the risk, go to trial, and risk losing it all because you could do that. The jury may not take to the case and not give you what you want. And after the costs and everything else that's involved in a lawsuit, you could come out not netting out very much money. If that's the way you want to go with it, Herb, then I'm all for you. Then let's go to Vegas and just go to trial and see if it comes up odd or even." And then, he was thinking about that. See, a lot of plaintiffs come in, they hear it from their lawyer, but maybe they need to hear it from somebody else too.
Right.
And there's something else that really clinched this case of settlement. I'll tell you about that when you're ready. But so this is how I kind of fashioned the mediation, working on him, thinking about other things, trying to establish a common point of interest between him and me. He was a sports guy, football fanatic, college football type guy, as I was. So we were able to connect in that way. So I was able to get a little bit of trust in him. Mediators have a very short period of time to gain trust. You got to get trust in these people, get them to trust you, because if they don't trust what you say, it doesn't matter what you say. So we established a bond. His wife was on board with that. And so we took maybe 10, 15 minutes and just talked about football and got away from the mediation altogether. And all this time I'm spending with him, and I'm spending very little time with the carrier, because the carrier wasn't going to be my problem. It was going to be him. So that's why I told the carrier, "I'm going to probably spend 80% of my time with the plaintiff. So be patient, I'll be back." And so that's kind of how I dealt with him and his issues.
So you had a lot of expectations to manage. You had expectations of having to lower the demand of the plaintiff, lower those expectations, the expectations of his wife. So perhaps he didn't want to disappoint her. You
Right.
have the expectations of the carriers going in, who have to answer to whatever powers that be they have to deal with.
Right.
So it sounds like you know what the task is, and that's something that really I think people who mediate don't who mediate and are not mediators don't understand. It's to get to the point as a mediator where you can actually identify the task that you need to undertake. And it's different in every mediation, even what you might label as run-of-the-mill soft tissue injuries. Well, we're going to get back to this as soon as we come back from a break. I'm Len Levy. I'm on Masters of Dispute Resolution with Scott Dickinson.
Masters of Dispute Resolution is sponsored by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. NADN is the premier invitation-only association of civil mediators and arbitrators in the United States, with members in every state of the nation. Only experienced ADR professionals who are widely acceptable to local plaintiff and defense firms are invited to join the Academy's roster. The Academy's website, NADN.org, is the most widely visited neutrals database in the world today, with over 40,000 law offices, insurance companies, and corporations visiting our free website annually. Firms can search for neutrals by many criteria, including location, case expertise, qualifications, language skills, and most NADN members also publish their available dates, calendars, online, making NADN.org the go-to website for law firms wishing to schedule appointments online with their preferred mediators. For more information, please visit www.nadn.org today.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Scott Dickinson. Scott has told us about how he got his game plan going, and how was that plan executed, Scott?
Well, it got to the point where he wasn't coming off his 250 demand, and it was his way or the highway. The carrier, I think, had offered something like $40,000. And so I was working on the carrier throughout the day, and they really wanted to sell the case. They just, you know, it was a case that needed to be settled. It wasn't a case that should go to trial. So I was working. I knew I could get more money out of the insurance carrier. There was a couple little poker chips I hadn't played yet with them that I was prepared to do so when we got to the end of the game. But I realized throughout the course of the mediation that I was still missing something. There was a link in the chain I was missing. I just wasn't getting it yet until it dawned on me that he needed something. He needed something that he wasn't getting in life generally. And I figured it out. It was validation. The key word was validation. And it just was like a big light bulb just perked up in my mind. So I went in the room and I said, "Herb, you know what? I agree with you. You were injured in this accident and you sustained pain and you had medical bills and it was a pain to have to go through the therapy. I get it. I'm totally on board with you. Herb, I'm validating your feelings. I'm validating your feelings." That's what he needed. He needed to have his feelings validated. Now, feelings is probably one of the worst things you want to rely on when you make an important decision because they're up and down. And feelings are not facts, right? But I had to do a little turnaround and validate not the facts so much, but his feelings. Your feelings of being a victim, your feelings of being like this and feeling that, I agree with you. You're right on board. And it's like all of a sudden the world opened up to him. He felt like, my gosh, this guy, he's not an advocate. He's agreeing with me. I wasn't expecting that today. And his wife was like, oh my gosh, where's this mediator going with this? I said, tell you what, Herb, I think we're going to have a settlement today. I think you and I are on board. I think you and I are thinking alike. And it was just me and him now. His attorney was just in the peripheral now. He was like, he's loving it. He's seeing his client change, you know, right now. And so now I got him realizing that there's somebody in this mediation that's validating his feelings. We're not talking money yet, but validating his feelings. And he got a little teary-eyed. No one's ever talked to me like this before. And his wife was just, boy, I can't believe this, Mr. Mediator, that you're talking to my husband like a real person, not like as a lawyer or as a judge, just like it's you and him. I said, that's exactly it. There's things that are going on in his life that need to be addressed. And this is one of them. It's called validation. Then it got to the point, now what do I do? Then I got to deal with the numbers. So now I got him and I are in the same corner together. Now it gets to the point I got to talk numbers with him and the carrier. Carrier's been out of the loop a little bit. So then I had to go to the carrier and talk to them a little bit about what they needed to do. I had him where I wanted to go, and I wanted him to just percolate in that for a while. So I wanted to leave him for about 20 minutes, let him think about that with his lawyer. And then I went to go talk to the carrier.
You know something, so many people think that you've got to get back to the other side to right away at the value of his ruminating on what had been discussed to let it sink in, let it simmer. Sometimes gets lost a little bit in mediation, perhaps even more when we're doing it via Zoom, because we could jump right from one breakout room to the next breakout room in milliseconds. Yeah. But sometimes you need to slow it down, and that's great. I mean, from a standpoint of dealing with someone's personal issues, you don't often need to acknowledge that, right?
Yeah, a lot of people come to mediations and it is about money. Let's face it, people want to be compensated. But many times there are issues that I call are below the belt. They're bringing to the mediation baggage. There are things going on in their lives that are influencing their decisions that may not come out in the mediation. Sometimes as mediators, we got to be a little bit of a psychologist and try to figure out what are these some of these issues that are giving me a roadblock that I can't seem to reach them. And I figured out in this case it was validation. He needed validation. And that was his biggest roadblock, I think, in his life in general. And I'm not, my job wasn't to be his day-to-day validator, but for this case, he needed to be validated. Carriers don't need to be validated. They're very sophisticated in evaluating their cases. They think above the shoulder. They're very businesslike, very factual. Whereas plaintiffs who are injured victims come in with feelings, more feeling. I feel injured. I feel I haven't been treated appropriately. I feel they're not, fairly compensating me. And I call those issues below the belt issues. Those are below the belt. So you got to deal with below the belt issues sometimes when you're a mediator. And when you're dealing with a carrier, you got to deal with above the shoulder, the more intellectual, evaluative type of issues on the case itself. That's the language the carrier wants to talk about. Whereas the plaintiff, they want to talk about their feelings.
Was there anything the plaintiff's attorney could have done pre-mediation? And I realize we're 20/20 hindsight here, but is there anything that the attorney could have done to have his client come to the mediation maybe a step or two ahead of where he was?
That's a tough one. And in this particular case, I don't think so. I mean, he was a very good lawyer. He had a very good track record, very successful, great jury verdicts, highly respected. I knew him, and so I don't think so. He evaluated the case in, I think, very, very fairly, and he gave a demand that, unfortunately for him, his client wasn't going to accept a dime less. He had no choice and admitted it to me in private. He was very candid with me, and that was all confidential, of course. But I really don't think so. It was a specialized kind of case that it took some real digging to find out what was really motivating and driving his client. And that's what I had to accomplish in that mediation. But overall, and I still see that lawyer, and he's probably one of the finest lawyers in the area here. But every once in a while, you get a difficult case that, it's just tough to get through all the barbed wire on. And this was that case for him. I call it the once in a while case. And this is a case I told the carrier, this is the once in a while case you're going to see in your files. That's not the boilerplate pigeonhole case. And I'm going to tell you why. And they were very interested. Why isn't this a pigeonhole case? And that was the poker chip I had to play with the carrier to get maximum compensation for old Herb and his wife.
And was his wife helping you gain any insight? Was this something what was her role in this?
Well, I gained her favor as soon as she saw that Herb was starting to get teary-eyed and started crying a little bit, because the tree, you got the hard bark of a tree. I was able to get through the hard bark and get to the soft stuff, the stuff that really drives us, that makes our decisions, that drives our emotions. And I was able to get into that. And his wife, who was very intuitive, very perceptive, and had she saw it. She saw what was happening to her husband. There was a metamorphosis going on. There was a change in his life that day. And it ultimately came to the point where I had to do something I've never done before to get him locked in. Because I still didn't have him locked in. And I just couldn't think of it until we took a break. And his wife came up to me and said, "Mr. Mediator, my husband is just, he's been staring at your tie. I see him looking at your tie all this time." And I'm thinking, it was my Jerry Garcia tie. Anybody who knows anything about ties knows that Jerry Garcia ties are the bomb, right? That got all the paisley colors. So I said, "That's it." So we went back in, and without missing a beat, I said to Herb, I said, "Herb, I've really enjoyed seeing you today. I knew the mediation was going to come to an end. I just had that feeling because I'd been talking to the carrier and I knew I was, shaping them as well. So what I did was I took my tie off, just like I'm doing right here, took it off just like this. And what I did was I put it around Herb's neck like this. I said, "Herb, check this out." I had my tie here and I put it around his neck and I got him in order there and I pulled it up, you know, right around here. I can't do it right now, but I had a little half Windsor knot there, put it on him. And I said, "Now, Herb, there's one handsome 85-year-old looking man. What do you think, wife? How's he look?" And she just lost it. She broke down. Herb got, he lost it. This was the ultimate validation, going beneath the waters of mediation into someone's personal life that, you know, I just took a chance. I mean, sometimes you just take a chance and it worked. And then he said this in his teary-eyed emotional state, "What do you want me to do?" He called me by my first name then. "Scott, what do you want me to do?" Because before all that, it was Mr. Dickinson this, Mr. Now he's calling me my friend, which I totally welcome. I want that personal relationship. "Scott, what do you want me to do?" And so those are the magic words to a mediator's, "What do you want me to do? You tell me what to do." I said, "Herb, I'll be right back." I went and talked to the carrier. Came back, played my card with the carrier, got them to pay substantially more than what they wanted to pay, at a number that Herb was thrilled with. It wasn't his $250,000, but he realized that there was more to life than just coming in and making demands, but someone validating him and giving him something that he wasn't receiving up until that point in time. And unfortunately for me, the downside of the whole mediation is I lost my Jerry Garcia tie.
I was gonna ask.
But at the expense of changing one's life was, you know, it was worth its goal. It was worth its goal.
So you helped restore his personal image.
Yep.
And essentially gave him the confidence to accept the result.
Yep. And his wife and him walked out hand in hand. They were happy. It was like a new beginning to them from this mediation from an automobile accident. I never would have thought that would have been the case.
So you didn't just settle a case. You changed a life. And with that, Scott, thank you very much. I really appreciate your sharing this with us. It was fantastic story. And Scott, what is the best way for people to reach you if they want to schedule a mediation?
Well, you can always contact, ADR, but, you know, I like personal contact. People can just contact me on my email address, and that's SD, like Sam David, ATTY, @gmail.com. Just a direct email to me is probably the easiest to do it. Or they can contact ADR.
Well, thank you. Thank you again. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer and producer, and I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podflips.io, powered by Infigen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.